Good morning. Welcome in. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, the midday show with Andy and Randy with you here on a hump day.
Hump day.
Hanging again. All right.
Haven't been in on a Wednesday.
Hump day.
Do you know how long it's been since I've been in with you guys on a Wednesday?
I don't.
Because of United or hosting, and I haven't been in since like early August.
You know, they broadcast the program.
Andy.
You can access it on the Odyssey app. We do a podcast you can download.
It's normally nap time. Okay. I'm going to be honest.
That's it. All right.
Because I've been using it for my long runs. I've been using the Wednesday mornings for the long runs.
Okay. I got it.
Should we start the show?
I don't know. Should we? Do you want to just come back tomorrow or Wednesday's inconvenient for you? I'm not sure.
No, I'm just saying I didn't know I was supposed to hump day.
Okay. Do you want to do it again?
I might screw it up, but sure.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for being with us here on a hump day. There it is. It's Wednesday. We're with you. We're halfway to the weekend. And it is the midday show with Andy and Randy. If you're just joining us for the first time this week, Randy's on vacation. He'll be back Monday of next week. Abe's filling in for him. And we've got a lot to talk about. Dave Archer is going to join us at 11:40. Obviously, talk some Falcons with him, get his thoughts on what happened against Seattle, and continue looking forward to the game on Sunday against Tampa. We'll get Mark Schlereth in here in the 1 o'clock hour and talk some big picture NFL stuff. Obviously a lot of college football to get into ahead of a big weekend coming up on Saturday. Georgia has a bye, but a ton of other big games coming up that we'll get into. And the Hawks season begins tonight. The NBA season began last night. Maybe you got a chance to check it out. Maybe you didn't. The Celtics defending their championship off to a good start against the Knicks. They beat the hell out of them. They made 10 threes in the first quarter, and that game was over pretty much at that point. Lakers and Timberwolves played the second game. LeBron and Bronny got on the court at the same time. That was pretty cool. They played more than 90 seconds.
You pretty much called it in terms of when it was going to take place, too.
They kind of had to do it like that. Yeah. It was a good game, so they needed to have all of their best players on the court.
And Bronny.
It's all right. It's his first game.
Wide open three.
That was a fun one between the two games that were played last night. And then tonight, you get the Hawks starting. And we've kind of hinted at it throughout the week as far as leading into the season beginning and what this season. We talked to Mike Conti about it yesterday. And it's interesting because I expect the end result in terms of record to be pretty similar to what it was the last couple of years. I'd be pretty impressed if this team isn't in the play-in round. I'd be pretty disappointed if they're out of the play-in round. So basically, if they're anywhere between 7 and 10, that's sort of where my expectations are in terms of seeding in the Eastern Conference. But that's also what I expect. So if that's what it is, okay. The last couple of years, it was maybe you can be better than that. You got this guy. Maybe this will work. And some fairly disappointing results record-wise. They've gone a different direction. They've gone younger. Trey's still here, but everyone else is relatively young, the core. And so now it's sort of a build, which is interesting. It's interesting to go from what that is without getting rid of the star player. Hopefully it works. Hopefully it works. And this is the first year in a step towards something really good.
Well, I'll tell you what. I agree with you about the win-loss record and the seeding. I am still irrationally excited about tonight and the start of the season. I think the preseason got to me in ways it probably shouldn't have. But Zachary Risacher looks a lot more like he fits in immediately than I probably thought he would. I think Dyson Daniels has come in off of a pretty good Olympic run and is shooting the ball decently well. And I think when you were talking with Steak there at the end, there was this idea last time out that you're going to bring in DeJounte Murray and he was going to single-handedly fix your defense. And I'm not saying that you're not kind of doing the similar thing with Dyson Daniels, but you also add in another year of Jalen Johnson. You also add in Zachary Risacher that's got some length. I think there's other facets that maybe could see you improve defensively. I think it's going to be a fun year. I don't necessarily know how many wins fun produces, but I'm excited to see guys grow into what I think eventually could be a core that can compete. They're not going to be there now. I think we got to be open about that.
It's interesting to say that because I think that that's actually been a word that people have used the last handful of years.
Core?
No, fun. like that this group, you know, this group, I don't know
zero
what they're going to do.
Fun,
but
sir.
But I think this
past couple of years.
I think this group might be, they kind of will run. They didn't. I think they might be, no, they weren't. They weren't fun. Like, it really wasn't any fun, especially, unfortunately, especially in the first 60 or so games last year when Trey and DeJounte were on the floor together.
Yeah.
And it just didn't work. And then the final 20 games when DeJounte was running the show, it was, I don't want to say it was fun, but it was more functional in terms
sure.
of what they were trying to run offensively. Obviously, DeJounte being traded in the offseason, you get Dyson Daniels and some others in return for him. It feels like the pieces fit better.
Feels
like,
fresh.
When, sure.
Which, to me, it
sure,
helps.
Sure, they're all young for the most part. There's a few older guys on the team, but for the most part, like the guys that you're excited about watching this year, including Trey, by the way, who's still a very young player in the league. It feels like you went the direction that we were kind of asking them to go to if you were going to build around Trey, which is put some solid perimeter defenders around him that can shoot the basketball,
right.
Let him get in the pick and roll, whether it's with Capella or maybe it's Jalen Johnson, however they want to use that, and try to play to all of the strengths that he has offensively and then see what that looks like when you actually build the team around him. It's just one of those things where so many of the pieces that you're hoping are core pieces, contributor pieces to this group, are unproven and young, and watching them grow will be, it'll certainly be a growth year. I hope it's fun. I hope it's a fun year.
A couple of things. I want to go back to your comment about why last year maybe wasn't as fun and a couple of years before. We had talks at the start of that year. Could they be a 6 seed? Could they be a 5? There's none of that right now. And so I think naturally you're not necessarily going to disappoint so much expectation-wise. I think part of that is one of my favorite years of Hawks basketball was like Josh Smith's rookie year. They won like 13 games, but they were fun. They were a dreadful team, but you know, they eventually got to the point where they made a franchise record consecutive postseasons when they had Horford and whatever. The other aspect of this is when it was just Trey, what did we ask for? Let's get another all-star in here to run with Trey. Mm-hmm. That's what DeJounte Murray was. Mm-hmm. That conversation very quickly changed to, it's not another all-star we need. We need the right guys around Trey. And so we have shifted now to what we believe is a more natural fit for guys around Trey. Dyson Daniels, who has a specific role. Zachary Richesche is going to have a specific role. So will Bogey and DeAndre Hunter. And Jalen Johnson's the guy that's kind of role-less in terms of you're asking him to pick up the extra weight. But, yeah, it feels fresh. It feels like things are in a better fit. And because my expectations are low, because the win total is low, I think it's going to be easy. Not that they will surpass my expectations, but I think it's easier to do so this year.
Yes, I very much feel like it'll be hard for the Hawks to disappoint me this year. It'll be really hard to be disappointed in them this year. Because
there's only one way.
I don't expect that much from them. I think they're going to be all right. They'll be all right. If they miss the play-in.
I was going to say, like, Richesche has to look like a complete bust year one.
Even still.
Which I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think that's going to happen either, but
that'd be a way to disappoint me, though.
He's so young, and it's going to take so long for him to be anywhere near the guy that, like, I think you might want to pump the brakes on your Richesche expectations, because he's going to struggle. Like, he's not going to look like he looked in preseason in a lot of these games. Like,
is 14 points a game too much?
Yeah.
Oh,
I think so.
Oh boy.
I think
it could be a long year, boys.
No, it's not. It's not. No, I don't think it has to be.
I'm kidding.
But yeah, I mean,
okay.
I think there's going to be flashes for sure, but I think this is going to be a big learning curve for a guy that's as young as he is and kind of where he's at physically and all that kind of stuff. I just think the whole NBA in general is a crapshoot, especially the Western Conference. I'm not saying the Hawks are going to crapshoot their way into making a big run, but there's just a lot of unknown as far as which teams are the best and who can stay healthy and who's still a star and all that kind of stuff. So I think we enter into a very interesting NBA season, no doubt. Starts tonight for the Atlanta Hawks. All right, we'll come back. We'll get to what's trending here to kick off the show on a hump day. Dave Archer is going to join us in about half an hour as well. Thanks for being with us. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We're going to be a young and fun team, and I'm excited to go out there with 1 through 15 guys plus the coaches and just defy all the narratives and just prove everybody wrong. I'm excited. Training camp has been, it's probably been my most fun training camp, just as far as energy, team spirit wise. We're all really linked together and locked in. So I'm excited to go out there and, you know, get battle tested tomorrow and, you know, start this long journey.
Jalen Johnson there. Probably one other reason why this was his most fun training camp.
Feel like 150 million reasons why this was the most fun one?
Yeah. Probably.
Like, yeah?
Probably pretty fun to sign a five-year, $150 million contract. But I'm sure all that other stuff was really fun, too. And hopefully what he says about the basketball team is also true, which is that he thinks that they will be fun. There's definitely an infusion of youth, no doubt. Anytime you get the number one overall pick, you're going to have a guy who's at least a part of your rotation. Usually he's the main guy, but obviously that's not the case with the Hawks, who's really young, and Zachary Richesse is really young. Dyson Daniels is really young. Trey is still young. Jalen Johnson is young. Like, there's a youth in this core. Bogey's a vet. Obviously Capella is a vet. So you've had DeAndre Hunter, been around for a while. I don't know if I can call him a vet or not, but he's been around for a while. So there's sort of a mix, but yeah, the guys that you're excited to watch this year, new faces and old, but excited in slightly new roles, are young. And so therefore, I suppose you can call this a young team, which is interesting because over the last couple of years, they certainly were not that.
To me, I look at it as, and yes, there was the expectation that maybe a couple of players were young and still developing the past couple of years, but it felt like the team was built. And that was the team, and that was what was going to win. Now there's an opportunity to grow, to build, to mature together. And I don't want to use the process. Like, we understand what that means in the NBA world.
Yeah.
But it feels like they're starting a process of improving. And to me, the ability to kind of see steps along the way is what makes it potentially fun and exciting. You get to see Jalen Johnson potentially take the next step. Mm-hmm. Same thing with a number of guys, including like Kobe Bufkin, who's banged up a little bit, but guys that maybe haven't been impactful on this team yet with an opportunity to. And then, as you mentioned, obviously Richesse too.
This is not always the most accurate because it takes into account literally that's everyone on the roster, and there's some guys that'll be coming off the bench and guys that are a little older. But the Hawks are the 15th team in the NBA in terms of average age, which is right smack dab in the middle. The crazy thing is that the two youngest, especially the second youngest, is the Thunder.
Yeah, I was going to say OKC.
No problem. They're just all 23. Probably the best team in the West at this point. The Spurs are also 23 and a half. The Magic are 24. So there's some pretty good young teams as well. And then the oldest team in the NBA started the season last night. Oh, actually, no, the Clippers are the oldest team in the NBA, which is also not that surprising.
That makes sense, yeah.
They're average age of... It's funny, they're the oldest team in the NBA, and the average age is 20.
And the other one's
29.
Lakers? I would have guessed the Lakers were up there.
The Bucks are second, the Warriors, the Sixers, the Suns. But yeah, I mean, yes, there's... Where are the Lakers, actually? It's funny, the Lakers are 13th. LeBron and AD are older.
Yeah, Connect and Bronny are young.
But everybody... I mean, yeah.
Russell, yeah.
You got Austin Reeves and Hachimura and some of the other
the untouchable Austin Reeves
are pretty young. Anyway, it all gets started tonight right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Pre-game at 7, tip off at 7:30, and for my money, one of the coolest, if not the coolest, story tonight is that Steve Holman's going to call his 3,000th consecutive Hawks game. That's nuts. That's a number that doesn't exist in broadcasting. I guess I don't know what the record is, but that's insane. So congratulations to Steve Holman for three, and that's without a game missed, 3,000 consecutive Hawks games called. I believe the first game of that streak was the year that you and I were born. I think we were born the year that he called his first game.
A long time ago.
It was a while ago. So congrats to Steve. That's phenomenal. Hopefully that streak continues for a long, long, long time. Here's Kirk Cousins talking about the mindset of the team with Tampa on Sunday.
You know, this is pro football, and you have to go back and you know, have candor about, hey, I got to be better. This has to be better. Make the improvements, corrections, and then it put together a strong week of practice, and then go with a resolve to Tampa and plan on playing your best football you possibly can. That's what it takes to win in this league, and that's what we have to do.
Pretty obvious areas of improvement. I mean, coming out of the game against Seattle, number one, I would say try not to come out flat. Let's not have three penalties, pre-snap penalties on the first drive. And then obviously clean up turnovers and more like X's and O's related things. But just from the jump, you got to start with a more fire, more ready to go mentality. It didn't seem to be there against the Seahawks on Sunday.
It's a tough discussion to have because I wouldn't really like circle any one player and be like, this guy has to be better from a football perspective. It was just the emotions and whatever that was on Sunday across the board. I mean, it was absolutely across the board, and I don't know how that happens. I don't know how they fix that, but
I'm going to ask Arch about it in 15 minutes because I don't know, like what goes into that. It happens. I understand teams come out flat sometimes. I'm sure there's a million different reasons why, but like what did he see as to what that was on Sunday when they lost to the Seahawks by 20 points at home?
Is there a way to ever snap out of that when that's what you start? Like, do teams ever like wake up?
Like
is there
it.
A halftime thing like?
It doesn't seem as they certainly didn't.
Falcons aren't the first team to
that's what I kept expecting to happen. I was like, look, all right, we get it. They came out flat, whatever.
They'll get it in gear at some point.
Maybe somebody can say something at halftime. Maybe they'll be able to reset and come. I kept expecting something to click and it to look offensively the way that it had in the previous couple of weeks, and it just never did. Like, every chance it felt like it might get there, there would be a turnover or there would be a penalty or something like that. So, I mean, I'm sure it can, but it certainly didn't on Sunday.
And to be fair, there were moments where it felt like maybe it was going to come around,
right.
And the Seahawks made a big play.
Like, all right, here we go. Oh, no, you made a penalty, and now it's first down for them.
Yeah.
You got off the field on third down, but you committed a penalty, so now it's a whole new set of downs for them. Kind of couldn't get out of their own way on Sunday. So hopefully they fix that and more ahead of the game against Tampa coming up this weekend. We'll get Arch in here in about 15 minutes to talk about it. Atlanta United just won't die. They won't quit. Credit to them. They go on the road last night against Montreal, making the playoffs against all odds in the first place. Then they go on the road last night. They get into a shootout and do this.
Action at the goal to our right. Saba directly behind the ball. He gets the whistle. Saba up to it. Strikes it. Score! Atlanta United is going to Miami! Atlanta United wins their first playoff shootout in franchise history. Lionel Messi, we'll see you Friday night.
Hell yeah. They're going to go see Lionel Messi and Inter Miami on Friday night, advancing in a shootout last night. Now, we're up 2-0 at halftime.
Yes.
Joseph Martinez did score two goals in the second half, as he does.
He scored the goals, but he didn't really kill you as a team.
Right.
The first goal was a mistake.
I know, but he does that.
I know.
He's such a good poacher,
The penalty kick second goal.
It's one of those things that great. Like, obviously, he scored brilliant, beautiful in the run of play. Like,
goal
he's
the year,
a great
couple years
striker
ago.
Goals. But he also is so good at just cleaning up a mess of garbage around the goal, which I think is another hallmark of a great goal scorer. Like, not every goal you score is going to be some beautiful strike from 30 yards out. Like, you make a mistake in front of the goal mouth, in front of a guy like Joseph Martinez, he's going to put it in the back of the net, which is what he did to Brad Guzan last night. He also finished a penalty to tie the game at two. But they get to penalties, and Guzan makes one save, and one save in a penalty shootout is usually all it takes. They made all five of their kicks, and they're advancing to the next round against Miami.
He saved the second penalty take from Montreal, and here was what was impressive. Of the Atlanta United five takes, none of them were even close to being saved. Guz almost had an opportunity to save a second one, but it snuck by him. For Atlanta, like, they were just – they just blitzed them with the kicks. Dax McCarty got it started, and they just went on from there, and that was that. And it was really impressive.
What's the most frustrating, as a fan, the most frustrating way to see a guy miss a penalty?
Over the bar?
Just off frame.
Well,
if you miss the goal, it's infuriating.
So,
like, I get guys try to be cute sometimes and deke them or outthink them and hit the little, what do you call it, where you float the one down the middle?
Pinnacle.
Whatever you want to call it. Yeah, like, sometimes guys do that and it backfires.
Yeah.
But if you just miss the goal, it's infuriating. It's a huge goal.
Missing wide, like, barely brushing the post is one thing.
Hit the post.
Skying it.
You got to at least hit the post.
Skying it is, like, a whole different, like, were you even trying to aim?
That's a whole operation failure. Like, you just panicked and hit it terribly.
I've also, like, probably not at the pro level, But I've seen people kick a ball and like miss kick it to where it doesn't have enough juice to get to the goal line.
Oh.
Like they slip a little bit and it just, right, it moves 5 feet.
I'm not talking about like Wednesday night co-ed league. I'm talking about...
I've seen like bad college fields that just a guy slipped and the ball went like 4 feet. And you're like, goalie save, I guess.
Nothing makes me more mad as a fan when it, on a, because it's 12 yards.
There's no excuse. It's
12 yards. The goal's huge. Just hit the goal. Like you don't have to make it. The goalies are great. They're going to make saves sometimes.
8 yards wide, 8 feet high.
It's so, fine. Just it. Put it on net. And they did. They did all 5 times last night. They found the back of the net all 5 times last night. Now they advance. Here's the nuance to the playoff series that they advance to. Maybe you know, maybe you don't. It's a best 2 out of 3 no matter what. It's not aggregate. So Friday night when they're on short rest and they go down and take on Messi and the Super Friends, as Conti calls them, they could lose 7-0. Doesn't matter.
It's one loss.
They get game 2. It's one loss. They come home and win 1-0. Then they advance to a third game, a knockout game. So contrary to, I think it used to be aggregate in the MLS playoffs, and it's certainly aggregate in other leagues when they have home and away situations. This is a playoff series. So
and
what happens
down
Friday
the
night,
down the road, they
just
get
one game.
Yeah, down the road, they just get rid of the series entirely. It's just a home game. So you are confirmed 100%. Inter Miami will be coming to Atlanta, I believe, Saturday, November 2nd. So, assuming he's healthy, Lionel Messi will be there, and they're going to have to give it because Atlanta United has fared pretty well against Lionel Messi since he joined Inter Miami. They
beat him.
They were the last team to beat Inter Miami at Chase Stadium at home. They're the last one to do it. Now it was way back in like May.
Yeah.
They've only got 2 losses on the season at home. One of them was to Atlanta United. You drew in the game that was here. So a little bit of success, maybe a little reason for some optimism.
That's a whole different group of guys than went down there and beat them. A
little bit.
That time, but it doesn't matter. It's fine. You did it. Muscle memory. They're scared. I can tell.
The goal scorers are still here. Sava scored twice and Thierry got one.
Miami's scared. Messi's never played in a game this big.
How much pressure is on them? Because they are single season record holders and supporter shield winners. Like there is pressure to throttle United.
I don't know.
Maybe not in game one. Maybe there's more pressure in game two if they were to drop the first one, something like that.
That's an interesting question because, like, what do you mean?
They're the favorites. They need to win. Course. Like, of does course. That affect it? I can't affect Messi.
No, I think he's.
I can't imagine. I think
that World Cup final was probably
a terrifying run in which they have one game leeway to lose is probably not high on his pressure scale.
Nah, I think he's going to be all right. I think all those guys are probably going to be all right from a pressure perspective. Also, if they lose the series, I don't think that's going to be. Do we do like legacy tarnishes?
I'll no longer call Messi the GOAT if he loses to Atlanta United. He's out.
We only do that with LeBron, like a game by game basis. If LeBron misses a layup, then he's not the best.
Back to Ronaldo, best of all time.
All right. Dave Archer is going to join us next. We'll talk some Falcons with him. We'll get his thoughts on what went wrong against the Seahawks, what they can fix against the Bucks coming up on Sunday as well. So don't go anywhere. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, the midday show with Andy and Randy with you here. 20 minutes away from an NFL no huddle to kick off the noon hour. Mark Schlereth going to join us in the 1 o'clock hour as well to talk some football. A lot of NFL conversation today, as always. This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com, get a guaranteed offer on your home today, and start packing. Wednesdays at 11:40 mean Dave Archer joins the show. Arch, how are you?
Fellas, how are we doing?
Good man. Good to hear from you. Obviously, not the performance anyone was hoping to see on Sunday from the Falcons against Seattle. And you heard Raheem talk about it afterwards and use the word flat. I'm sure there's a lot of different reasons for it. We see it happen sometimes, but like when you see that, how surprised are you to see this team come out and look like that?
Well, I think that it happens to periodically to players throughout a season in their careers. I think that. Periodically, you see a team maybe play flat for a quarter, for a half. It was a little disturbing to see this happen for the entire game because there never seemed to be really any bump or any energy. There were some positive things that happened. Bijan Robinson was off the charts the way he ran the football. I think Tyler Algier, when he got his 5 carries, was devastating in his normal way as well. But then there was just a lack of attention to detail. When I hear the word flat, it means fine focus, meaning we're locked in on this particular play, this particular series. If you're space focused, you're kind of there, but you're not, you know. And I thought that there was a little bit of that. And I thought the attention to detail, you know, Drake London runs an in cut. That 6'5" wide receiver goes up. He normally makes that catch. It's about 6 inches above his head. The ball goes right through his hands. It's picked off. You know, Justin Simmons is out of position on the cover two on the play at the end of the half. He's supposed to be inside. AJ's supposed to have help to the inside on that play. Just attention to detail and where you're supposed to be. Hands, where's your hand placement as an offensive lineman to slip up into the hand, the face, or is it down where it's supposed to be? And it really was weird because it seemed like everybody had that problem. Kirk had that problem. You get out of the pocket there, you're not going to make that play. Just take the ball and eat it. Don't try to do something you're not capable of doing. Ball's on the ground, and all of a sudden they get the touchdown that really kind of pushes the game out of focus. So those are the kind of things that I saw happen.
Arch, you mentioned that you were surprised it lasted the entire game, and I know you've seen plenty of teams and potentially been on some that do come out flat and snap out of it. Well, what does a team look for or look to kind of get them going, and why couldn't the Falcons find whatever it takes to jumpstart them on Sunday?
Well, usually, Abe, it's a guy that's in a position to affect the game immediately, and that's a guy with the ball in his hands. Kirk Cousins would have been maybe the focal point. I think Bijan, like I said, tried to do his piece to it. Mm-hmm. But Kirk's got the ball in his hands every time, so delivering the football, being accurate with the ball. He missed that touchdown early in the game. Ray McLeod comes coping on that corner out. He talked about that postgame with me. He felt like that would have been something that would have jump-started them. Defensively, is it a sack? Is it a takeaway? Something like that that presents that energy. And it almost looked like everybody, Abe, was kind of looking around for, can you make that play for us? Can you make that play for us? And nobody really stepped up to make the play. Again, Bijan had his moments, but, you know, that there was a little bit of energy there. And the building was kind of flat, too. There was not a lot of energy. And Kirk said post-game, bring our own energy to pump the building up. But you'd like to have seen, you know, maybe you felt that as a fan. And you say, we got to get these guys going. Let's do something to get this team going.
Well, one area where there hasn't been any lack of energy for sure, all of the games against their divisional opponents have been, they've had that and they've been good and they've won them. They've got another one coming up this weekend. Obviously, Tampa's going to be without their two best pass catchers. How much does that impact what they want to do offensively, do you think, Arch?
Well, I think that, you know, obviously there's a dramatic trust thing. We've been talking about, you know, quarterback and their trust with the receivers, and we've seen Kirk grow with Mooney and with Drake and with Pitts and with Ray. That's developed over time, and that's developed in game. So now he's going to be in game, and he's played with these guys, but how many have had to step up? Sterling Shepard had to step up and make a play. Jalen McMillan is an outstanding receiver out of Washington. They drafted in the third round. Is a good player. Trey Palmer's made some plays over the last couple of years for him. But again, they haven't been the guys counted on like Godwin and Evans to make that game-changing play like Abe was talking about. How do you get that energy going? How do you make plays? And so there's going to be a little bit of feeling out is to make that happen. And so I assume that they will lean more on their running game. It's an emerging running game with White, Irving, and now Sean Tucker, who had a monster day against the Saints a couple of games ago. So they've got a kind of a three-headed monster running the football. I think they'll throw the ball to Irving a little bit more. Rashad White will catch the ball in the backfield a little bit more. Tucker's a good receiver out of Syracuse. So I think you'll see them mix that in. Cade Otton is an outstanding tight end. Now, are they game-breaking type players? I think you're probably leaning more towards those running backs to be those kind of players. And then you hope somebody emerges. I mean, hey, we don't have to go very far than the Tampa Bay game last time where that guy out of nowhere, Cordarrelle Patterson, made the game that changed the play or play that changed the game. So one of their guys is, hey, this is my opportunity to be that guy to solidify myself. So you got to be careful of that. Don't go in thinking, hey, they don't have their two best receivers, so they can't throw the football. That's way off.
Right. Arch, I kind of want to double down on Cade Otton here. He is, to me, the guy that now steps up into maybe the biggest threat on that team. If you are looking from a Falcons perspective and who you're going to have healthy and available on Sunday, who do you think maybe gets the duty of slowing down the big tight end for the Bucs?
Well, unfortunately, we don't. It just seems like we don't match up a ton with guys man to man. Now we'll see some certainly, but this is a team that mixes a lot of zone pressures, and then every now and then you'll mix man. If you do get the man coverage, it's going to be Jesse Bates, probably. It will be potentially Justin Simmons, albeit I think they like Justin in the back end. And a guy long for, you know, almost like forgotten guy, I think Richie Grant. This is a nice matchup for Richie Grant here. I think he's got man-to-man skills. I think with Justin Simmons kind of nursing the hamstring a little bit, that maybe we see a little bit more Richie Grant. He had that blitz early on in the Carolina game that got in Dalton's face that forced an incompletion early in the game. He's very capable. He's a guy that had 100 tackles for this team a season ago. So I think that's a guy that's kind of lost in the weeds here a little bit that might be able to come up. And if you're going to play some man coverage, you can match up on Cade Otton. If it's first and second down, Atlanta doesn't play a lot of first and second down man coverage, so it's going to be zone. Otten's very capable of finding those little zones, and you can bet that Baker Mayfield, with his two main receivers out, is going to be looking Cade Otton's way. We saw it at the end of that game last on Monday night.
Dave Archer joining us here on the Midday Show with Andy and Randy, getting ready for Falcons-Bucks coming up on Sunday. It sounds like he's doing better. That is Troy Andersen. Hopefully he can practice throughout the week and be back out on the field on Sunday. How much of a difference would he make to be in the middle of this defense against the Bucks?
Well, he's a bigger linebacker, Andy, and so I've talked a little bit about that with you guys on the show. There's a degree of stack and shed that the linebacker has to have still in this era. When I played, there were a lot of big linebackers, and you ran the football, and they would step in and they'd take on guards head to head, then they'd try to shed them and make the play. But what they were doing was building a roadblock for backs, so they didn't have a clean run through your front seven. I think you get a little bit of running around blocks and stuff like, because Caden Ellis is so quick and fast, he creates problems with his ability to run by blockers, but sometimes he runs himself out of the play. Nate Landman is a little bit more of a stack and shed guy. And I think Troy Andersen, with his size at 245 pounds, he's another one of those kind of guys that can take on blocks and maybe create some roadblocks so you don't have those clear runs through the defense. That would be what he would bring to the table for me.
Arch, one of the things I've found interesting as we've gone through the course of the season has been the running back workload. And I thought we had maybe slid towards a little bit more shared workload with, yes, a hot hand maybe carrying a couple extra times. But this past week against Seattle, Tyler Allgeier was back down to five carries. Were you a little surprised maybe that they didn't continue to share the workload a little bit more like they had in previous weeks?
Well, I think some of it, Abe, is where you got to in the game. You're playing catch-up the entire game. And when you got into the second half, it even felt more so that way. Now, Atlanta ran, 71 plays to the 56 plays of Seattle. But you felt like you're trying to catch up the whole time. And did you get away from the run game? Maybe a little bit in the second half. I mean, Bijan was seeing things and running the ball. And he was really our most explosive player on the offensive side of the ball. So you hate to take the ball out of his hands. Tyler came in and did a nice job, I think, at 35, 36 yards rushing on seven on five carries. That's 7 yards a pop. So it's not like he wasn't doing something. But I think you felt like you needed to throw the football. You needed to get back in the game. You needed some explosive plays. And I think we got away from the run game a little bit. Bijan got the main bulk of the carries. Does that change this week? I think they do still, like you're talking about, ride the hot hand. But you were looking for explosives, and I think Bijan gives you the best opportunity to do that in the run game. But I think we probably got in a mode where we felt like we were playing catch-up and maybe we tried to throw football a little bit too much last week.
This is pure speculation, but it's more popular in the NFL now than it had been in years past as far as teams trying to address a need or two before the trade deadline. A couple weeks away, you think the Falcons are active trying to add something before November 5th?
Well, I know they're active, Andy. Now, whether that ends up being a player or not, I mean, obviously we're going to have to wait and see. But I think that there's no question in talking to Terry and talking to Raheem that they're actively looking. Okay. You know, there was some conversation about Hassan Reddick, and I'm not talking about from the Falcons, but I know on you guys' shows and stuff like that about Reddick being one of those kind of guys that may be available because of the discord between he and the Jets since he's gotten a deal done, I guess, or at least in the process of getting something done. There were some things attached to him that made it difficult to make that deal, even if he wanted to. I mean, Philly put in that if the Jets were going to trade him in the NFC, the Jets would have to give up a second round draft pick to do that. And so there was a lot of stuff that just didn't work. And they're not going to want to give up a second round pick. They're going to get one back and they're going to have to give it to Philly. You know, it's just one of those kind of deals. So that kind of maybe took him out of the box for a lot of teams, not just Atlanta. But I do think they're actively looking. Now, whether something comes together or not, be prepared to see Damon Harris a little bit more on the field. I thought he was pretty active in this game. And I know you guys are talking real quickly. I know you guys got to get it a break. But I know you guys are talking about pressure on Geno Smith. I went back and charted the first half. Mm-hmm. He was credited for 19 throws. I think he was 15 and 19, so a pretty good first half from a statistical standpoint. But on the 20, he was correct. There was 22 attempts. He got sacked on one. I think two were nullified by penalties. But of the 22 snaps he took to throw the football, he was pressured on 11 of those.
Okay.
And five of those were quick throw, or I'm sorry, six of those were quick throws that he got out of his hand, like a quick throws, you know, quick outs, hitches, things like that. He was pressured on 50% of his throws. So to say that they're not getting after the quarterback, they're not sacking him, but they're around him. He got forced out of the pocket, I don't know, four or five times in the first half because of pressure. Now, do you need a better job of rushing him and keeping him in? Sure, and that'll be something you'll have to do with Baker here. But Damon Harris is a guy that showed up. He had a pretty good training camp, a guy that can rush the passer a little bit, and I know he's been kind of laying in the weeds in the practice squad. If he gets a chance to be in there, he's a guy that can pressure the quarterback that might be maybe a hidden guy there that helps out.
We'd love to see it. Arch, we appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, guys. Take care.
Dave Archer there, Atlanta Falcons Radio Network, former Falcons quarterback. Again, this hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com, get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. Yeah, and look, maybe that's where it comes from too. Maybe it's Damon Harris or more blitzing or whatever. Now, Geno is one of those guys that can handle pressure pretty good, like slides around in the pocket, isn't terrible on the run and all of that. So even when you heat him up, he kind of just takes the smart throw and keeps it alive. Baker's the same way.
Yeah, I was just saying, the pressure thing, you know how we
Dak
feel
Prescott's
about it.
The same way.
Pressure doesn't feel like it's affecting the quarterback.
What?
I know it's a stat and it's there, but it's doesn't feel like it's changing the tide for our defense.
Well, it certainly wasn't affecting him into making mistakes.
Right.
That's for sure.
That's what I mean, yeah.
I think it may have affected Geno into throwing it quicker or taking a check down or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I love getting pressure on the quarterback half the time. I just
guess what
just
you like, love more.
You'd like it to be more impactful.
Yeah.
All right, we'll come back. We'll get to an NFL no huddle to kick off the noon hour. Thanks for being with us. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.